From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Marketing Matters on Business Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Marketing Matters here on Business Radio, Sirius XM 132. I'm Barbara Kahn, the Patty and J.H. Baker Professor of Marketing, and I'm joined by my co-host, Americus Reed, the Whitney M. Young Jr. Professor of Marketing and the Brand Identity Theorist. Hello, Americus.
Hi, Barbara. So this afternoon or maybe later on tonight, I'm going to take a shower with my jeans on. The listeners right now have no idea what that means, but it will be unpacked later on today in today's show, please.
Yes. I can only imagine, Americus. And coming up on today's show, as Americus alluded to, you will hear a riveting conversation that we had earlier today with Chip Berg, who's the former president and CEO of Levi Strauss & Company, where he served from September 2011 to January 2024. The interview is a special LinkedIn Live edition of our show, Marketing Matters, and we were really excited to experiment with that new format.
Yes.
And we think it went super well,
super well, don't we?
Yep. So
100%.
Take a listen, and we hope you enjoy. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this special LinkedIn Live edition of our show, Marketing Matters. I'm Barbara Kahn, the Patty and J.H. Baker Professor of Marketing, and I'm joined by my co-host, Americus Reed, the Whitney M. Young Jr. Professor of Marketing and the Brand Identity Theorist. Hello, Americus.
Hi, Barbara. It's great to be here. I'm so excited because, you know, one of the things we do is talk about super iconic brands, the brands that basically stay culturally relevant and that people get excited over. And so what have we got today? It's going to be so exciting on this very special live session.
Yeah, we're excited to have another brand guy here with us in the studio today.
Yes.
And I'd like to introduce Chip Berg, who's the former president and CEO of Levi Strauss & Company, where he served from September 2011 to January 2024. Welcome, Chip.
Hello, Barbara. Americus, thank you very much for inviting me to join you today.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's really excited. And
very
we're
cool.
thrilled to be hosting our featured guest here on the show today. And later on, we'll be taking live questions from everyone watching online. So make sure to put your questions in the comments section.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk a little bit about Chip, because he's had such an incredible
career. Absolutely.
Yes, he has led many iconic brands during his 45-year career spanning the U.S., Asia, and Europe. He spent 28 years at P&G and Procter & Gamble in the roles of increasing scope and complexity in brand management, general management, and executive leadership. Among the many accomplishments, he led the creation and launch of Swiffer. He oversaw the turnaround of Old Spice. Isn't that one of your favorite brands?
Yes, absolutely.
And he was the first P&G executive to lead the iconic Gillette blades and razors business globally following P&G's $57 billion acquisition of Gillette in 2005.
Wow.
But at Levi Strauss, Chip has been credited with leading the company's story turnaround and using his platform to take bold social stances.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chip, after all these years, what made you decide to retire now?
Yeah.
Well, I'm 66, and it's been a great run. And, you know, I think leadership changes at the top, you know, 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, 14 years as a CEO is probably the right amount of time. I have the energy and stamina, I think, that I could have done this job for another 4 or 5 years probably, but you know, I've been in the job for 12 and a half years, and we had an amazing successor who I brought into the company, and Michelle Goss, who was the former CEO of Kohl's, and she was ready, and I'm totally convinced that she is going to take the company to the next level. So it was time to move on, and you know, I've been out of the job. It was 2 months exactly yesterday. And
that's pretty fresh.
I know it's fresh. But I can honestly say I've been really, really busy. I miss all of my colleagues. Mm-hmm. I miss the fun of being at work, but, I don't really miss the job because I know it's in really, really good hands with Michelle.
Nice.
Oh, that's pretty exciting. Okay, awesome. So let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
How did you first get involved with Levi's? And what did the brand mean to you then?
Yeah.
Okay, so wind back the hands of time to sometime in the 2010s. I was running Gillette, you know, a big global business. It was about $7.5 billion, and all of the male grooming brands at P&G, including Old Spice. So it was about a $7.5 billion global business. And I was actually in China at a leadership team meeting. I had my whole leadership team over in China, and I got a call from a headhunter who I knew. And I had gotten several calls for other CEO opportunities. Mm. And she said, I think I've got something you might be interested in. Eye roll, right? You know? And I was like, okay, what is it? And she said, what do you think about Levi's? Mm. And the words out of my mouth were, oh, wow. Mm. It was a completely different reaction than any of the other calls that I'd gotten for a CEO opportunity. And, you know, what flooded through my mind were two things. One, some of the vivid memories I had as a kid, my brand experiences with Levi's, and we can talk about that. And then the other thing is, you know, I traveled all over the world in my prior job, and I lived in Asia for 7 years. Mm. And everywhere I went, you saw Levi's and Levi's stores. And, you know, I thought at the time that this was probably a $10 billion business. And it wasn't until I started really digging into what was going on at Levi's that I discovered it was, you know, about a $4 billion business at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I do like to say everybody has a Levi's story. I started doing homework on the company. Mm. You know, the bottom line was the company peaked in 1996 at $7.1 billion in sales. And then the next 5 years saw massive shareholder value destruction as revenues deteriorated from 7.1 to about $4 billion. And then the next decade, the 2000s, the company just kind of bumped along between $4 and $4.2, $4.3 billion in revenues. Mm. I have two grown boys who today are 41 and 36. When they were teenagers, they never had owned a pair of Levi's. Mm. It wasn't even in their consideration set. So I went back to kind of my days as a kid. When I was going into seventh grade, I asked my mom to drive three towns over so I could get a pair of Levi's to go to middle school.
Right.
Because only the cool kids wore Levi's.
Right.
That's so cool. And Marcus knows cool kids.
Well,
cool
yes. kids. Cool kids. That's cool right. kids. And, red tag.
And I'm a brand guy. And so my whole hypothesis was if we could make the brand what it was when I was a kid, mm-hmm. that would turn the brand around and that would turn the company around because the brand is 85% of the company's revenues. So the going in hypothesis was the fundamental issue here is a branding issue. Mm-hmm. And if we can make the brand cool again, put mm-hmm. it back at the center of culture, mm. have it resonate with youth, with young people again, that would turn the business around.
I know Levi's, and you've embraced social issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things is rebuilding the brand. The other thing, and we've talked about this a lot, what's the role of a brand in purpose-driven marketing and mm-hmm. social issues, important issues like voting, LGBTQIA plus equality, immigration.
Right.
Those are polarizing issues. How do you decide what to embrace and what not?
Yeah,
so... first of all, the first thing I will say is this is not about me. This is about the power of the platform and the role of CEO at Levi's. And part of the reason the board wanted an internal successor was that they understand how we process all this and how we decide what issues we're going to stand for and which ones we're not. Many of the issues that we've taken stands on predate me.
Mm.
So LGBTQ, we've been doing this for a long, long time. And our brand is very, very tightly associated with it. And it is part of who we are.
Mm.
Others are new, though. And, you know, so taking a stand on ending gun violence in the U.S. specifically is a relatively new issue for us. And we had a very thorough process to vet it, number one, and to work it with our board of directors because there's a governance role that they've got to play here to make sure that we don't do something stupid. And so let's take ending gun violence as an example. How did we get into it? We have 250 or so at the time. This was 2016. We have roughly 250 stores or so in the United States. And our store managers came to me saying, we're concerned. Mm. People are walking into our stores brandishing a gun
in open carry states,
right? Wow. And they were like, we've got a company policy. You can't bring a gun to work. You can't bring a weapon to work. And when somebody walks in with a gun, you don't know if they're a good guy or a bad guy. Right. And you worry about the safety of your own employees and other customers in the store. And so this was right before the election in 2016. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of, we went to school on what have other retailers done. Mm. And there were a couple like Starbucks and Target who had already kind of been the tip of the spear on this one to some extent. Mm-hmm. And their approach was to publicly just put out a notice, don't bring a gun into our stores. Mm. And they took some blowback for it. Anyway, we were going to hold off until after the election until a gun went off in one of our stores.
Oh,
so a guy was in the dressing room.
Oh, dear.
Had a gun in his pocket. And when he took his pants off, the gun went off, literally shot himself in the foot. So, but, you know, it could have been an employee. It could have been you or me or right. one of our kids.
Right.
It could have been, you know, some innocent bystander. And that was it. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. So we put this letter out that had already been pre-written and cleared with the board that, you know, please don't bring a weapon into our store. Mm. And, of course, there was huge blowback. Mm. I had unmarked police in front of my house for a while. I had death threats.
Oh, wow.
But it was the right thing to do. And so that got us into this debate. And then the Parkland shooting happened in 2018. And I was like, look, we're already in for this. Let's go big or go home. Because this is now an issue that youth were mobilizing behind. Mm-hmm. And the Parkland youth in particular, if you remember back after that, they were mobilized. And it's like, let's empower them. And so, again, working with the board, you know, we were going to do a one-year program. And the board was like, no, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it big. Go big or go home.
Yep.
And so we committed to a four-year. We created a special fund of $1 million to fund these mostly youth organizations. We also worked with Giffords, you know, Gabby Giffords organization, which is really committed to ending gun violence in this country, and the Sandy Hook Promise. So other organizations as well that are committed to changing the legislation. We're not about repealing the Second Amendment or anything else.
Right.
This is about common sense legislation that would reduce the risk of gun violence in this country that is broadly supported by weapon owners, by the way.
Right.
And it has been something that we've been committed to now for more than 4 years. And we're going on, I think, year six or seven now. And we played a role when the legislation passed Congress about a year and a half ago. We mobilized the business community. I got 500 plus CEOs to sign a letter to Congress to pass that legislation. And I've been told the business community played a role in getting that legislation. It's the first meaningful gun legislation in over 10 years. The last thing I will say about this, again, I'm a storyteller, sorry.
No, it's great.
We know that this is one of the biggest issues with young people in this country. It's second to climate change. Mm. You know, think about the kids that go to school. They're practicing lockdown drills. Mm-hmm. My daughter went to elementary and middle school in San Francisco. They practice lockdown drills more than they practice earthquake drills. Mm-hmm. And it's a reality that, you know, now almost 60% of adults know somebody who has been affected by gun violence. Right. So it's touching everybody.
I just want to summarize what I'm hearing you say. So you haven't taken on a lot of issues. You don't take on the flavor of the month issue.
Mm, right.
But you take on an issue like LGBTQ in the beginning that's really true to your brand. The second issue was true to your retail environment.
Yep.
And then you go big or go home.
Right.
I mean, so then once you go into it, you double down on it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so if there's negative, I mean, I imagine everything you're saying sounds really positive to me, but if there is some negative, you're willing to take that trade-off because it's been very thoughtful and you're going to go into it with very well thought out reasons. And there is that true? I mean,
that and you summarized it better than I told the story, actually, but that's exactly right. And in fact, I have said one of the biggest challenges we have is we are known for taking these stands. So we get hit up for everything, right? Can you help us with this? Can you help us with that? And if you stand for everything, you stand for nothing. So it is strategic, and it is about the halo that it provides over the brand, and it has to be consistent with the brand. Right. And you know, when you talk to people about Levi's, they will say Levi's is a strong brand. It is a brand that is about using its authentic voice. It is all about empowering people, and so that's why voting rights, democracy. All of that is really, really important. When the Berlin Wall came down, the kids on the wall were all wearing Levi's.
That's
incredible. Hope you took a picture of that.
Somebody did.
Somebody did.
It's a very famous picture.
It's a famous picture. I love that point, Chip, because I want to build on that a little bit and take it in a little bit of a slightly different direction. One of the things that is a theory about why you get involved in purpose-driven marketing is because not only does it signal something to the marketplace of consumers, it also signals something to people you would attract as human talent. Can you speak on
that? Definitely. I mean, when I joined the company, one of the things I did is I went on a listening tour and I asked the top 60 people in the company six questions. What are the three things that have to change? You know, turnaround. What are the three things that have to change? What are the three things you think we have to keep? What's the one thing you hope I will do? What's the one thing you're afraid I might do? What's the one piece of advice you have for me? And I always forget the sixth question.
And those are five pretty good questions. I hope someone's writing them down. Five great questions.
Yeah. I sent them to the same questions to everybody. And then I met with the top 60 for about an hour. And I thought it would take 40 interviews to come up with a clear picture. No, it was very, very clear early on. But one of the things we had to keep were our values.
Oh, interesting.
This was, people joined the company, and people through the worst period of time in the company's history stay with the company because of who we are and what we stand for. Mm-hmm. So the purpose of the company, which we talk about as profits through principles, you know, not being afraid to take a stand on important social issues, that we exist. And this goes all the way back to Levi Strauss himself, the founder. We're in business to do the more than just make a buck for the shareholder. We are in business to be a force for good in the world.
I love hearing this.
I know.
This is so good.
This is fantastic.
You do kind of bring tears to our eyes. Right? This kind of thing is great. So a question that we got from our audience is, how has Levi started to leverage emerging technologies such as AI, virtual reality, augmented reality?
Yeah. And I would say we jumped on the AI data science stuff before Gen AI, pretty early. And we've had hits and misses, I guess, is what I would say. We built a pretty decent sized organization over a relatively short period of time, and have had some successes in using AI, in particular for assortment planning, demand and supply matching, things like that. A lot of back office use as well, and using bots in back office to kind of speed the processing of a lot of transactional type data. The Gen AI stuff, we've had multiple experiments going on. Some have worked, some haven't. I would say it's still early days. We have made investments during my time, some of which I wish I could kind of take back, honestly, because I think we fell in love with the idea faster than, you know, and again, my middle name is discipline, and we were a little bit undisciplined, I think, in going after chasing a lot of the potential big ideas here. We invested a lot in trying to completely automate our supply planning, and I would say that was not successful, and we spent a lot of money on it. And instead of testing small and kind of scaling as we should have done, we fell in love with the idea faster than the idea proved itself.
Interesting.
And we wound up, you know, making some mistakes along the way. Live and learn. Yeah. I do think, you know, if you're running a business and you're not experimenting with this stuff and getting experience,
right,
you know, you're missing the boat on something.
So you should live and learn.
This is clearly where the puck is going. And,
right.
And I think the real challenge is, where do you begin testing it and getting experience with it? And is it with consumer-facing activities, supply chain-related activities, marketing-related? You know, a lot of companies are using it for media and media planning and things like that. And I think you have to be really, really thoughtful about where and how you get started.
We got a few questions that are kind of pedestrian, I'll say, but it's kind of interesting. One of them came in is like, what's the right way to wash jeans?
Oh, that's the reason is because I'm going to my grave. I said at a sustainability conference, it was one of the first conferences I did. This was probably like 2012 or 2013. And denim heads, back to denim heads, they will tell you never put a pair of jeans in the washing machine. And we did a life cycle analysis of a pair of jeans, and jeans consume a lot of water. 50% of the water that it consumes are in your washing machine and mine. And we here in the United States tend to wash our jeans almost every single time we wear them,
right?
Which is really wrong. And we wash them in the washing machine, which is really wrong. And so I famously said, and this I still get on my news feed. Yeah. It gets picked up like every week.
Every week.
I was misquoted. What I said was, you don't need to wash your jeans in a washing machine. I said these. What I actually said was, these jeans have never seen the inside of a washing machine. The headline the next day was, Levi's CEO never washes his jeans. But seriously, the way I wash my jeans, and this really is also, funny. You know, found its way around the world. I either hand wash, you know, kind of spot clean them. Some spaghetti sauce or something, I'll spot clean them.
Yep.
And if they get really, really gross, I'll wash them the way I did when I used to backpack around Europe, which is hop in the shower.
Oh, you wear
wow.
them.
Hop in the shower, soap them down, rinse them off, take them out. Take them off.
So now the headline is going to be CEO, you know, take full showers. Oh, goes in the shower fully dressed.
Trust me. There is a YouTube video on this. Some reporter tested it. And actually that, but all seriousness, you know, products made out of cotton, some might have some stretch and have a little bit of polyester or something, but the fibers in cotton get destroyed in a washing machine. And so if you want to really, especially if you buy good quality denim, really good quality denim, you just don't want to throw them in a washing machine. You're going to destroy them much faster than they would last otherwise if you really took care of them. And by the way, it's better for planet Earth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Who knew this was going to be our best question? Really thoughtful.
I told you I was a storyteller.
Yeah. Well, I have one more question, and then we're going to have to end. This has been just amazing. But this is I'm curious that a lot of things we'll teach. This is my question. But a lot of things we'll teach in marketing is new marketing is not about customer acquisition, getting everybody on the planet to buy a new pair of jeans. But it's to go deeper into your customer base and sell them more, which suggests that you move off of jeans into other kinds of product categories or other services. You cross-sell, and you build out your portfolio that way. Do you have a feeling about that as a philosophy?
Yeah, well, last time I checked, we don't have 100% market share. So the first opportunity that we've got is to continue to build market share. And, you know, I do think we live in a world where there is overconsumption, and I think that is going to change. I think the sustainability thing and young consumers being really concerned about planet Earth, and they know when they buy something from fast fashion and wear it three times and throw it in the garbage, it winds up in the landfill. And this is not good for planet Earth. I think consumers are going to buy fewer things that are more versatile, that are better quality, that are going to last longer. That plays right to our sweet spot.
Right.
That's what we're all about. Quality never goes out of style. And so I do think over time, you know, our aspiration, and Michelle is taking this to the next level, her ambition is to drive this brand to be a denim lifestyle brand. And that's a pretty big house to live under. We got to get it right, you know, first on men's and women's bottoms, then men's and women's tops. But where it goes from there, remains. But thinking about other revenue streams is really, really important. And in today's world, you know, we're testing LevisSecondhand.com where people can buy secondhand Levi's.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, all of these could be, it's a science project right now. It's really, really small, but it could be, you know, another revenue stream down the road for us.
Okay, we got one last question that we got to hit because people are really interested in this. Uh-huh. Can you talk about vintage and resale with regard to Levi's? There are a lot of people who are now into thrifting and secondhand. Mm. What's your take on that?
I have no data to back this up, but we're the number one brand in thrift stores because people love the hunt. And vintage is something. I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and she's really into it. And vintage is something that authenticates the value of this brand.
Oh, interesting.
Think about it.
Yeah.
You'll pay $250 for a 25-year-old trucker jacket that you could buy brand new for $150. Mm-hmm. You'll pay a premium for something that's 25 years old. Mm. It says the value of this brand and the fact that people want to hunt for something that is 20 or 25 years old, that there's added value in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's
incredible.
Yeah. You got one more question?
It's a sociological exercise. It's your point, Chip, about the brand being so nostalgically powerful and iconic. It's just one of these things in human nature that says, you know, I want to seek out those things that have this sort of value that's associated with it. And you're willing to hunt. The experience piece, right? Because it's sociological, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Very, very cool.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's edition of Marketing Matters. Thank you so much for being here, Chip. It's really been inspirational.
It's been so much fun. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to a special edition of Marketing Matters with our special guest, Chip Berg, former president and CEO of Levi Strauss & Company. That's all we have time for today. We'd like to thank our producers, Dion Simpkins, Dana Cash, and the whole Wharton team. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening today. We'll be back next week. Till then, this has been Marketing Matters. I'm Barbara Kahn, here with Americus Reed, Business Radio, Sirius XM 132.